Hi, this is Jeff Curto, and welcome to episode number 70 of Camera Position, a podcast about the creative side of photography. Well, if you've been following along, this is part two of a two-part series on In Camera Position about Gestalt, as it applies to photographic composition. Gestalt is a generally considered a psychology of visual communication that helps explain how the mind works to make sense out of the visual world. And we're taking a look at some of its concepts here to try to examine how those concepts might apply to photographic composition. In the previous episode, Camera Position 69, we took a look at two Gestalt concepts, one closure and the other one continuance. And we're continuing on today with the other two of the four more important concepts of Gestalt, and that is similarity and proximity. And it's probably worth pointing out here that because we're talking about elements of design, subject matter doesn't count that much. Gestalt is mainly based on what things look like, not what they are like. So the thing itself doesn't matter. It's more about the way the thing looks or the way the thing presents itself to the camera and ultimately to the viewer of the photograph. The mind can only keep track of a limited amount of visual information at one time. And when the mind gets overloaded with information, it tries to simplify things by grouping objects together. Groups are formed in ways that the brain finds logical and are based on what the objects look like and where those objects are located in the scene that we're looking at. The concept of similarity can be very powerful, and it can help achieve tremendous unity in a composition. Just as importantly, though, when things are dissimilar, they will resist being grouped and tend to show greater variety. The Gestalt concept of similarity can be used in both ways, to group things together into sets that are similar to one another, or just as easily, it can be used to point out the differences in things that are dissimilar enough that they can't easily be grouped together. There are three major types of similarity, three major types that are talked about in Gestalt concepts. And those three major types of similarity, the ways that things can look either the same or different, are size, shape, and color or value. Color or value kind of lumped together, and we'll explain why that is here in a minute. So let's first look at size. Items are often grouped together simply because they're the same size or similar sizes. Their shapes are less important if the sizes are similar. So if you've got circle shapes and triangular shapes and rectangular shapes, if they are the same size, they are likely to be grouped together even though their shape is dissimilar. And so while this pair of pincers or pliers and a horseshoe that I found in a Tuscan blacksmith shop aren't at all similar in terms of their shape, their sizes are fairly close to one another, and therefore we can tend to group them together and make sense out of them visually. Another example of grouping by size is seen in this photograph of the Palazzo Ducale in Venice. And look at how the size of the little decorative pieces at the top of the palazzo and the size of the decorative pieces at the bottom of the photograph that are at the top of some columns of a colonnade. And even the window that's in the top left corner of the photograph, how those are similar enough in size that we can tend to group them together and, again, make more visual sense out of them. Shape is another one of the basic kinds of compositional structure based on these Gestalt principles, based on this principle of similarity. And items and compositions that are similar in shape tend to group pretty easily. Though complex shapes can be very interesting in photographs, simple shapes are usually more attractive and therefore can be more visually powerful. An interesting aspect of the concept of shape is that shape can also be expressed in things like texture or even direction of movement of things in the scene. So, for example, the rectangular signs in this photograph of a storefront in Scano in the wonderful province of Abruzzo in Italy, the signs all being rectangular really help us group those signs together. And there's so many different rectangles in this photograph, the rectangles of the windows on the left-hand side of the photograph, as well as the rectangles of the sign, that it's really easy for our eye to group all of those rectangles together. A third way that similarity can be used is in color and value. Well, let's first dissect that a little bit. Color, of course, the name of the hue that we're looking at, so we talk about things as being orange or green or red. Value, the lightness or darkness of things, is a component of color, a light red, a dark blue. So we tend to group those two things together, color and value, when talking about this particular similarity component. But they can act independently as well, just like in black and white photographs, where the value is really the only thing that we're looking at, and we don't look at color. Grouping by color and value is very common. We tend to notice colors or values that are similar to one another and group them together, even if they aren't all that close to one another. One of the more interesting things, I think, about photography and about composition, especially with color photography, is referencing colors from one side of a photograph to another. So in this photograph of these young boys in the Umbrian hill town of Gubbio, celebrating a local festival, the reds and blues are colors that we reference. We group things together by the similarity of those colors. And even the color of the red scarf of the kid in the yellow shirt in the background of the photograph gets made into part of that group that we look at when we group together the reds and even the blues from one object or one person's clothing to another. Similarly, in this tray of blueberries and raspberries that my sister-in-law is holding here, what we do, what our mind does, is it groups together for us those little red blips of raspberries, and we see them as a group. We see them, even though they are distributed throughout the tray of berries, we see those red berries as a group because they stand out and because their color allows us to group them in a certain way. And lastly, with this idea of grouping by color, is grouping by value. And we had talked about how value is a component of color, lightness and darkness of something. And here we can see that we can fairly easily group together the doorway at the bottom of this tunnel and the detail in the ceiling at the top of the tunnel that are presented with value that is similar to one another. And in fact, one of the things that you'll see in a lot of my black and white photography, as well as a lot of other black and white photography that's out there, is the use of value change to direct the eye and to assist the eye in grouping things relative to their value, their lightness or darkness. It's important to note that these two objects in this photograph, the ceiling and the doorway, don't have to be the same size, they don't have to be the same shape, they just have to have values that approximate one another and therefore can be grouped in that way. The other concept of gestalt that we want to talk about today is proximity. A very important gestalt consideration is where objects are placed in relationship to one another. Relationships of proximity are often more powerful than relationships of similarity and are usually more dominant. When proximity and similarity are used in combination with one another, extremely powerful visual controls can be exercised. There are several different types of proximity relationships. In photography, the most commonly used are close edge, touch, and overlap. Close edge suggests that the closer the items are to one another, the more likely they are to be seen as a group. The amount of space between objects is often relative to their size. I tend to use close edge in a lot of my photographic compositions. I really like that sort of visual tension that comes from that small space between objects and tend to use it quite frequently. So I've included a few examples here, and I'll zoom in and out of those close edge relationships a bit so that you can kind of see the idea of where I'm placing those edges. And of course, camera position, the podcast, comes from my idea that the positioning of the camera is really important. And of course, these relationships of proximity have a lot to do, in fact, almost exclusively have to do with position of the camera. Touch occurs, I suppose, fairly obviously, when items touch each other. They are still seen as two different items, but they seem to be attached to one another. Their edges just touch, but don't overlap one another. Touch can usually provide a stronger gestalt than a close-edge relationship. So I've got a couple of examples of touch here, one from a church in San Quirico d'Orcia in Tuscany, where the shadow touches the window's edge, and that touch is just as effective as objects touching one another. And in fact, I waited for quite some time for that touch to occur, a couple of different days, in fact. And then I thought I'd also drag this picture back in of these wood-splitting tools, and the touch between the hammer and the wood-splitting wedge is another touch relationship. Overlap provides the strongest gestalt between two items. Overlapped objects provide a strong grouping regardless of their color or value and regardless of their shape and size. So you can see that these overlap relationships that I have in a couple of photographs here, the tangerine overlapping this blue bottle and this boat in Venice with the overlap of the stairs in front of it, allow us to group these objects together by proximity, knowing that they're very, very close to one another, and therefore providing a visual grouping within those objects. So those ideas about gestalt as they apply to composition, closure, continuance, similarity, proximity, those are really basic concepts that I suppose we don't really need to talk about relative to gestalt theory, the psychology of visual communication, and yet once we understand how those things work, we can begin to apply them in our compositions, the compositions that we create when we look through the camera's viewfinder. So thank you for joining me on this episode of Camera Position. I am delighted that you're here and delighted to hear from so many of you out there. I don't always have time to answer everybody, but I try to get at least some answer to everyone. So thanks for writing and thanks for listening to Camera Position, the podcast about the creative side of photography. Camera Position is a proud member of the Photocast Network, your photo resource in the podosphere. Photocastnetwork.com.